blind herd by night. I bow not to thee, O true mosque of day. Black light of night, to the soul of man. Conscious of immortality, I walk. First, I demand what labors of Yavan, my husband, waking in the forest of charm. Out of his long, pure childhood, lonely dreams, desire, and had not. For his beautiful life, give, and thou must, or if thou can't foresee.
Good morning, everyone.
If I'm right, we've come to page 582, which is the beginning of Canto 2 of Book 9. Book 9 is the Book of Eternal Night. And last week we completed our study, reading and study of Canto 1, which is called Towards the Black Void. It describes the stages that Savitri passes through from the time when death comes to take the soul of Satyavan. She's determined to follow. She will not let go of her contact with Satyavan's soul. But in order to keep that, she has to leave her physical body. There's a moment of trance when her spirit realizes that in order to follow this quest, the physical body must be dropped. And so, like an eagle soaring out of its nest, her spirit leaves the body, that the members are lying there on the forest floor, near to those of Satyavan. And in that way, she can get hold of the clinging hold of earth, the physical senses, and go with them. But they have not yet left the earth atmosphere. They're coming just to the borderline. Death tells her to turn back, but she doesn't reply to him. Instead, her high nude soul, stripped of the girdle of mortality, the form of the body, against fixed destiny and the grooves of law, stood up in its sheer will, a primal force. Still, like a statue on its pedestal, lone in the silence and to vastness bared against midnight's dumb abysses piled in front, a columned shaft of fire and light she rose. These are the last lines of Canto 1. I think we can go this way today. Margaret, you would begin.
Chapter 2. The journey in eternal night and the voice of the darkness. A while, on the chill, dreadful edge of night, all stood as if a world were doomed to die and waited on the eternal silence brink. Heaven leaned towards them like a cloudy broad of menace through the dim and voiceless hush, as thoughts stand mute on a despairing verge where the last depths plunge into nothingness and the last dreams must end. They paused in their front, their glooms like shadowy wings. Behind them, pale, the lifeless evening was a dead man's gaze. Hungry, the night soared. But still, in its lone niche of templed strength, motionless, her flame-bright spirit, mute, erect, burned like a torch fire from a windowed room, pointing against the darkness' somber breast. The woman first affronted the abyss, daring to journey through the eternal night. Armored with light, she advanced her foot to plunge into the dread and viewless vacancy. Immortal, unappelled, her spirit faced the danger of the restless, eyeless waste.
Thank you. Do you like to read?
Against night's inky ground they stirred, molding mysterious motion on her human tread. A swimming action and a drifting march, like figures moving before eyelids closed. All as in dreams when slipping, gliding on. The rock gate's heavy walls were left behind, as if through passages of receding time, present and past, into the timeless lapsed. Arrested upon dim adventures brink, the future ended, drowned in nothingness. Amid collapsing shapes, they went obscure, the fading vestibules of a tenebrous world. Received them where they seemed to move and yet be still, nowhere advancing yet to pass. A dumb procession, a dim picture bounds, not conscious forms threading a real scene. A mystery of terror's boundlessness, gathering its hungry strength, the huge pitiless void surrounded slowly with its soundless depths, and monstrous, cavernous, a shapeless throat devoured her into its shadowy, strangling mass, the fierce spiritual agony of a dream. A curtain of impenetrable dread, the darkness hung around her cage of sense, as when the trees have turned to bottle shades, and the last friendly glimmer fades away around the bullock in the forest died by hundreds closes in no empty night.
Thank you. Rosa.
Stress in the old was humbly. This effort is renounced fully and now families at last that it had been. It perished all its dream of ancient dawn. This closed supper was its dark result. In the of this stupendous now. Mind could not think, breath could not breathe.
Creative.
Assembled by the titan hands of chance. The Vasman is her in the dreadful dance. She saw no more the great tremendous dawn. Her eyes had lost the luminous Satyavan. Yet not for this her spirit failed, but held more deeply than the bounded senders can, which grasp externally and find to lose its object life. So when the earth they lived, she had felt him strain through the blades with glass, as seen in her its cleft served being vistas, opening their secrets to his search and joy, because to jealous sweetness in her heart, whatever happy space his cherished feet preferred, must be at once her soul embracing his body, passioning gently through his tread. But now a silent gulf between and between, a pure abysmal loneliness she felt, even from herself cast out, from love to know.
Thank you, Manoha.
Long hours. Since long it seems when sluggish is measured by the throbs of the soul's pain, in an unreal darkness, empty and clear, she traveled, trading on the corpse of life, lost in a blindness of extinguished souls. Solitary in the anguish of the void, she lived in spite of death. She conquered still. In vain a puissant being was oppressed. A heavy long monotony of pain, tardily of its fierce self-tortured time. At first a faint, inextinguishable gleam, pale but immortal, flickered in the gloom, memory came to spirits dead, a memory that wished to live again, dissolved from mind in nature's natural sleep. It wandered like a lost ray of the moon, revealing to the night her soul of dread. Serpentine in the gleam, the darkness lowered, its black boots jeweled with the mystic glow, its dull, sleek, fold, shrank back, and coiled and slipped, as though they felt all like a cruel pain and suffered from the pale approach of hope. Night felt assailed, her heavy, somber rain, the splendor of some bright eternity threatened with this faint beam of wandering truth, her empire of the everlasting now. Implacable in her intolerant strength and confident that she alone was true, she strove to stifle the frail, dangerous rain. Aware of an all-negating immensity, she reared her giant head of nothingness, her mouth of darkness swallowing all that is. She saw in herself the tenebrous absolute.
Thank you. So in those last is night. Srinivas, line 125, but still the light.
The light prevailed, and still it grew, and Savitri to her lost self awoke. The limbs refused the cold embrace of death. Her heart beats triumph in the grasp of pain. Her soul persisted, aiming for its joy. Soul of the beloved now seen no more. Before her, in the stillness of the world, once more she heard the treading of a god, and out of the dumb darkness, Satyavan, her husband, grew into a luminous shape. Then a sound pealed through the dead monstrous journey. Vast like the surge in a fired swimmer's ears, clamoring a fatal, island-hearted roar, death mission to the night, this evil call. This is my silent, dark immense. This is the home of everlasting night. This is the secrecy of nothingness, entombing the vanity of life's desires. Hast thou beheld a source, O transient heart, unknown from what the dream thou art was made, in this dark sincerity, emptiness? Hopest thou still always to last in love?
Thank you.
The woman answered not. Hostess refused the voice of night that knew and depth of hope. In her beginningless infinity, through her soul's reaches unconfined, she gazed. She saw the undying fountains of her life. She knew herself eternal without birth. But still opposing her with endless night, death, the dire god, inflicted on her eyes the immortal calm of his tremendous gaze. Although thou hast survived the unborn void, which never shall forget while time endures, the primal violence, the fashion thought, forcing the immobile vast to suffer and live. This sorrowful victory only hast thou won, to live for a little without Satyavan. What shall the ancient goddess give to thee, who helps thy heartbeats? Only she prolongs the nothing dream existence and delays the labor of living thy eternal sleep. A fragile miracle of keeping clay, armed with illusions, walks the child of time. To fill the void around he feels and dreads, the void he came from and to which he goes, he magnifies his self and names it God. He calls the heavens to help his suffering hopes. He sees about him with a longing
heart bears faces more unconscious than himself, that have not even his privilege of mind, and envy of all but their unreal blood, and peoples them with bright and merciful powers. For the sea roars around him, and earth quakes beneath his steps, and fire is at his doors, and death prowls baying through the woods of life. Moved by the presences with which he yearns, he offers in implacable shrines his soul and clothes all with the beauty of his dreams.
Thank you. Yes, Beatrice. Yeah.
The gods who watch the earth with sleepless eyes and guide its giant stumbles to the dawn have given to man the burden of his mind. In his unwilling heart they have lit their fires and sown in it incurable earnest. His mind is a hunter upon tracks unknown, amusing time with vain discovery. He deepens with thought the mystery of his fate and turns to song his laughter and his tears. His mortality vexing with the immortal's dreams, troubling his transience with the infinite grief. They gave him hungers which no food can fill. He is the cattle of the shepherd gods. His body, the
tether
with which he is tried, they cast for fodder grief and oak and joy. His pastures round they are fenced with ignorance. Into his fragile and defended breast they have breathed a courage that is met by death. They have given a wisdom that is mocked by night. They have traced a journey that foresees no goal. Endless mountains in an uncertain world, lured by inconstant forces of his pain, scorched like a beast by the infinite desire, bound to the chariot of the grateful gods.
Thank you. Helmut.
But if thou still canst hope and still wouldst love, return to thy body's shell, thy tie to earth, and with thy heart's little remnants try to live. Hope not to win back the suffering. That since thy strength deserves not no trivial charm, gifts I can give to soothe thy wounded life. The pacts which transient beings make with faith, and the wayside sweetness earthbound hearts with plough, these, if thy will accepts, make freely thine. Choose a life's hope for thy deceiving price. Assist the ruthless and tremendous voice, unendingly there rose in solitude, like moonlit ridges from a shuddering flood, a stir of thoughts out of some silence born, across the sea of her dumb happiness heart. At last she spoke. Her voice was heard by night. I bow not to thee, O huge mass of death. Black lie of night with the cowed soul of man, unreal, inescapable end of things, thou grim jest played with the immortal spirit. Conscious of immortality.
Thank you. Jocelyn.
clearly conscious of my thoughts, not as a suppliant who guided my pain, once then as a survival torture of night. My first strong grief moves not my seated mind. My onward tears have turned pearls of strength. I have transformed my inner shape brittle clay into the hardness of a statue's soul. Now, in the wrestling of a splendid God, my spirit shall be obstinate and strong against the vast refusal of the world. I stoop not to the subject nor of mine, who run to be with eager, satisfied hands, and flit from its mire, name something free, its cold feet, small concessions to the weak. Mine is the labor of a vacuum God, imposing on the slow, relentless years, the flaming river that runs beyond the stars, they lay the law of mind and matter's works, and win the soul's wish from earth's intuition force. First, I demand of the Sakyaba, my husband, waking in the fullest charm, and his pure childhood's lonely dreams, desire, and add not for his beautiful give, if thou must, or if thou canst, refuse.
Thank you. Patricia.
Death bowed his head in scornful, cold descent. The builder of this dreamlike earth for man, who has mocked with vanity all gifts he gave. Uplifting his disastrous voice, he spoke. Indulgent to the dreams my touch shall break, I yield to his blind father's longing heart, kingdom and power and friends and greatness lost, and royal trappings for his peaceful age, the pallid pomps of man's declining days, the silvered decadent glories of life's fall. To one who wiser grew by adverse fate, woods I restore, the deluded soul prefers to impersonal nothingness's bare sublime light to give to eyes which could have found a larger realm, a deeper vision in their fathomless night. For that this man desired and asked in vain, while still he lived on earth and cherished hope. Back from the grandeur of my perilous realms, go, mortal, to thy small, permitted sphere. Hasten swift-footed, lest to slay thy life, the great laws that thou hast violated, moved, open at last on thee their marble eyes.
Thank you. Paula.
But solitary answered the disdainful shade, world spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. My will too is a law, my strength a god. I am immortal in my mortality. I tremble not before the immobile gaze of the unchanging marble hierarchies that look with the stone eyes of law and fate. My soul can meet them with its living fire. Out of my shadow, give me back again into earth's flowering spaces, Satyavan, in the sweet transiency of human limbs, to do with him my spirit's burning will. I will bear with him the ancient mother's load. I will follow with him earth's path that leads to God. Else shall the eternal spaces open to me, while round us strange horizons far recede, traveling together the immense unknown. For I, who have trod with him the tracts of time, can meet behind his steps whatever night or unimaginable stupendous dawn breaks on our spirits in the untread beyond. Wherever thou leadest his soul, I shall pursue.
Thank you. Marianne.
She's so dramatic. But to a claim of voice, implacable, insisting on the immutable decree, insisting on the immutable law and the insignificance of created things, out of the rolling wastes of night, there came, born from the enigma of the unknowable depth, a voice of majesty and appalling scorn. As when the storm heard Titan's striding sea throws on a swimmer his tremendous laugh, remembering all the joy its waves have drawn, so from the darkness of the sovereign night, against the woman's boundless heart arose the almighty cry of universal death. As thou gods of feet that tread my stars, frail creature with the courage that aspires, forgetting thy bounds of thought, thy mortal role, their orbs were coiled before thy soul was formed. I, death, created them out of my void. All things I have built in them and I destroyed. I made the worlds my net, each joy a mesh, a hunger, a morass of its suffering way, life that devours my image, see in things. Mortal, whose spirit is my wandering breath, whose transience was imagined by my smile, flee, clutching thy cool veins to thy rest, pierced by my fangs, time shall not soon appease.
Thank you. Don.
Blind slave of my deaf force, whom I compel to sin that I may punish, to desire that I may scourge thee with despair and grief, and thou come bleeding to me at the last, thy nothingness recognized, my greatness known, turn nor attempt forbidden happy fields meant for the souls that can obey my law, lest in their somber shrines thy tread awake from their uneasy, iron-hearted sleep, the Furies who avenge fulfilled desire, dread lest in skies where passion hope to live, the unknown's lightning start, and terrified, lone, sobbing, hunted by the hounds of heaven, a wounded and forsaken soul, thou flee through the long tortures of the centuries, nor many lives exhaust the tireless wrath hell cannot slake, nor heaven's mercy assuage.
Assuage.
You say, I say assuage. Assuage.
Assuage.
Thank you. Okay. I will take from thee the black external grip.
Eternal
grip. Clasping in thy heart thy fate's exiguous dole. Depart in peace, if peace for man is just.
Mm, thank you. Larry.
But Savitri answered, meeting scorn with scorn, the mortal woman to the dreadful Lord. Who is this God imagined by thy night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained, who made for vanity the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts and made his sacred floor my human heart. My God is will and triumphs in his path. My God is love and sweetly suffers all. To him I have offered hope for sacrifice and gave my longings as a sacrament. Who shall prohibit or hedge in his course? The wonderful, the charioteer, the swift, a traveler of the million roads of life, his steps familiar with the lights of heaven, tread without pain the sword-paved courts of hell. There he descends to edge eternal joy. Love's golden wings have power to fan thy void. The eyes of love gaze starlight through death's night. The feet of love tread naked hardest worlds. He labors in the depths, exults on the heights. He shall remake thy universe, O death. She spoke, and for a while no voice replied, while still they traveled through the trackless night. And still that gleam was like a pallid eye, troubling the darkness with its doubtful gaze.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Norman.
Then once more came a deep and perilous pause in that unreal journey through blind north. Once more a thought, a word in the void arose, and death made answer to the human soul. What is thy hope? To what dost thou aspire? This is the body's sweetest lure of bliss, assailed by pain, a frail, precarious form, to please for a few years thy faltering sense with honey of physical longings and heart's fire, and a vain oneness seeking to embrace the brilliant idol of a fugitive hour. And thou, what art thou? Soul, thou glorious dream of brief emotions made and glittering thoughts, a thin dance of fireflies speeding through the night, a sparkling ferment in life's sunlit mind. Wilt thou claim immortality, O heart, crying against the eternal witnesses that thou and he are endless powers and lasts? Death only lasts, and the inconscient void. I only am eternal and endure. I am the shapeless, formable vast. I am the emptiness that men call space. I am a tireless nameless. I am a tireless, timeless, I'm sorry. I am a timeless nothingness. Carrying all, I am the immutable, the mute, alone. I, death, am he. There is no other God.
Thank you.
All from my depths are born. They live by death. all to my depths return and are no more. I have made a world by my inconscient force. My force is nature that creates and slays the hearts that hope, the limbs that long to live. I have made man her instrument and slave. His body I made my banquet, his life my food. Man has no other help but only death. He comes to me at his end for rest and peace. I, death, and the one refuge of thy soul. The gods to whom man prays can help not man. They are my imaginations and my moods, reflected in him by illusion's power. That which thou seest as thy immortal self is a shadowy icon of my infinite. Is death in thee dreaming of eternity? I am the immobile in which all things move. I am the nude inane in which they cease. I have no body and no tongue to speak. I commune not with human ear, with human eye and ear. Only thy thought gave a figure to my void. Because, O aspirant to divinity, thou callest me to wrestle with thy soul, I have assumed a face, a form, a voice.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Eugene.
But if there were a being witnessing all, how should he help thy passionate desire? Aloof he watches so and absolute, indifferent to thy cry in nameless calm. His being is pure, unwounded, motionless, one. One endless watches the inconscient scene where all things perish as the foam the stars. The one lives forever, there no Sajavan, changing was born, and there no salvation. Flames from grief like the bride of joy. Their love came never with these fretful eyes of tears. Nor time is there, nor the vain vast of space. It wears no living face, it has no name, no gaze, no heart that throbs. It asks no second to aid its being or to share its joys. Its delight immortally alone. If thou desirest immortality, be then alone sufficient to thy soul. Live in thyself, forget the man thou lovest. My last grand death shall rescue thee from life. Then shalt thou rise into thy unmoved source.
Thank you. Patty.
But Savitri replied to the dread voice, O death, who reasonest, I reason not. Reason that scans and breaks, but cannot build, or builds in vain because she doubts her work. I am, I love, I see, I act, I will.
You don't want to go on? All right. Stefania.
Death answered her. One deep sigh round the cry. No, also, knowing how shall cease to love and cease to will, delivered from thy heart. So shalt thou rest forever and be still. consenting to the impermanence of things. But Savitri replied from man to death, when I have loved forever, I shall know. Love in me knows the truth all changes must. I know that knowledge is a vast embrace. I know that every being is myself. In every heart is hidden the myriad one. I know the calm transcendent bears the world, the vague inhabitant, the silent Lord. I feel his secret up, his intimate fire. I heard the murmur of the cosmic voice. I know my coming was a ray from God. For all his sons were conscient in my birth, and one who loves in us came there by death. Then was man born among the mountain stars, dowered with a mind and heart to conquer him.
Thank you. Lydia, will you read?
In the eternity of his ruthless will, sure of his empire and his abhorrent might, like one disdaining violent helpless words, from victim lips death answered not again. He stood in silence, and in darkness worked a figure motionless, a shadow vague. But
vague.
Girt with the terrors of his secret world, half seen in clouds, appeared a somber face. Night's dusk,
tiara,
was his matted hair. She ashes of a pyre his forehead signed. Once more, a wanderer in the unending night, blindly forbidden by death, back again. She travels through the dumb, unopened vast. Around her rolls the shuddering dust of gloom, its swallowing emptiness and joyless death. Resentful of her thought and life and love. Through the long fading night by her compeller, gliding half seen on their unearthly path, phantasmal in the dimness mood with free.
Thank you. Thank you. It's rare that we have to read a whole canto at one go like that. Yeah, there wasn't any.
It's interesting, Patty was choosing to go on just for her own reason.
So let's go back to page 582. Maybe before we just go back, we can have a look at those last lines. Do you notice what happened at the end there? The appearance of death changes. He stood in silence and in darkness wrapped. Line 471, actually. Half seen in clouds appeared a somber face. Night's dusk tiara was his matted hair, the ashes of the pyre, his forehead's sign. It's only three lines, but it's a picture of Shiva in his Rudra form. This is a new appearance that he makes now. Something that she has said has forced him to change, this wonderful knowledge which she's expressed. So we can go back to the beginning of the canto. Mila, would you start?
the journey in the eternal night, and the voice of the darkness. Lying on the chill, dreadful edge of night, all stood as if a world were doomed to die, and waited on the eternal silent spring. Heaven leaned towards them like a cloudy brow of menace through the dim and boisterous hush. As thoughts stand mute on a despairing verge, where the last depths plunge into nothingness and the last dreams must end, they pause. In the front were blooms like shadowy wings. Behind them, pale, the lifeless evening was a deaf man's gaze. Hungry beyond, the night desire has soul.
Hmm. They're on a kind of borderline. It's like an evening just before it becomes completely dark. But this is a borderline in inner space, the borderline between some kind of twilight, earthly, inner, subtle twilight, and the night. The chill and dreadful edge of night. And they pause there. Satyavan pauses. Death pauses. Savitri pauses. Satyavan was in front, you remember. Death behind him like a shepherd, and Savitri behind. And Savitri's experience is as if that night just wants to swallow her up, destroy her soul, hungry beyond. The night desired her soul.
I'm wondering what year Sri Aurobindo wrote this. That second line, you know, as if a world were going to die.
Yes. I can't tell you from memory, but I have just done a study of a comparison between the earliest version of Savitri and the final one. And I can tell you that in this book 9, a lot of it comes from that earliest version. It was already there at the beginning. Mm-hmm. A lot of the lines, more than in any other book, except book 8, which is almost all from the early version. But I'm surprised again, reading it all the way through together this morning. What amazing poetry in these darkest cantos. How powerful, how beautiful. What an amazing picture he's painted here. The sky is like a heavy, looming cloud full of threat, of danger. Everything is dim, absolutely silent. And the three figures, they're standing there, they've paused. They're standing silent on a despairing verge. It's something, if they take a step further, things will become very bad, no? Where the last depths plunge into nothingness and the last dreams must end. They pause. In the front, these glooms like shadowy wings waiting to envelop them. Behind those shadowy glooms, those clouds, pale, the lifeless evening was a dead man's gaze. Hungry beyond, the night desired her soul. That's setting the scene. Yeah, but then you read the next. You have to read the next sentence. So full of courage, terror, would you read it?
But still, in its long niche of temple strength, motionless, her flame bright spirit, mute, erect, burned like a torch fire from a windowed room,
pointing against the darkness so no breath. The woman first affronted the abyss, daring to journey to the eternal earth. Armored with light, she advanced her foot to plunge into the dread and viewless vacancy. Immortal, unappalled, her spirit faced the danger of the ruthless Irish race.
Thank you. So she is unappalled. She's identified with her spirit, her flame-bright spirit. She's aware of her own immortality. So this darkness doesn't hold any terrors for her. So she's the first one to step forward. Armored with light. Tone, you'll read?
Can I ask?
Yes.
So, the woman?
The woman. What do you want to me to say?
Well, it's a capital W.
Yes.
It's a special emphasis.
Yes. We could say that it's an emphasis of the fact that Savitri represents the conscious force of the Supreme. She is the Shakti.
And that she now takes the lead implies that she knows where to go.
Well, she knows they have to go on, and she's ready to do it. She's not afraid to do that.
But Santiyuan is still in front, no?
They all three paused, no?
She's taking up the rear.
And now she's taking the lead. She's going first. Yes.
That he is conscious or unconscious, we don't know. He's a soul.
Well, it says she first affronted the abyss, but I thought that Satyavan was moving in front of the group.
I think it comes perhaps at the... I've forgotten. There is a place where it says, where it describes her.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have the line number. The ruthless eyeless
waste.
Shrivendo often mentions voids and wastes and support terrible things. Any idea why he's using eyeless?
Well, it seems that in that particular state that they're going, there's no power of vision. There's no, even if you've got eyes, you won't be able to use them. It's so dark. It's the waste, it's a state. That they are moving into some kind of subtle space, but it is threatening. There's danger. There's something ruthless, pitiless there, and it's blind. And it's a blind desert, a waste.
It reminds me of what I was thinking when I was coming here this morning. That the trash along the road is it's either thrown with bad will or it's thrown with total unconsciousness. It's both ruthless and eyeless. It's true, no? Unconsciousness is what's making the world a mess.
Who's next to read? Tone, you would read next. There's Tuan and there's Tone. I got them mixed up.
Before I would like to say something about the thought fire, which
yes.
is a very beautiful thing. As if it is enclosed in a room, but through the window you see that
it's spreading its light.
Pointing into the darkness.
Yes. You know, it's an astonishing thing,
very
and Sri Aurobindo somehow mentions it several times, that even the smallest amount of light forces one to see, somehow.
What I like also, now he will say, he talks a lot about swimming. I'm a swimmer for now. When you swim in a pool, you're totally alone. Although you can be swimming together with thousands of people, you swim
alone.
And it is some experience that is beautiful. That's why right now I can swim in the technical spontaneous, you can swim anyway. Come on.
Yes.
Do you want to read or shall I?
No, was it your turn to read, Tuan? Yes, please you read it.
Okay, then I read. Against night's inky ground they stir, molding mysterious motion on a human thread, a swimming action and a drifting march, like figures moving before eyelids closed, all as in dreams when slipping, gliding on. The rock gate's heavy walls were left behind, as if through passages of receding time, present and past, into the timeless lapsed, arrested upon dim, adventurous dream, the future ended, drowned in nothingness. Amid collapsing shapes that wound obscure the fading vestibules of a tenebrous world. No, the fading vestibules of a tenebrous world received them, where they seemed to move and yet be still, nowhere advancing yet to pass. A dumb procession, a dim picture bounds, not conscious forms, treading the real sea.
Thank you. She has advanced her foot. And he mentions her human tread. So she's in a subtle physical form, but it's still a human form. No? And they are molding the two spirits, Death and Satyavan. They are molding mysterious motion on her human tread. I think this is what gives me the idea that they are following her. No? And then that movement is, he says, a swimming action. It's for the spirits. They are just drifting or swimming through. But there's a drifting march. She is moving like that. And these are like figures that you see in a dream. Yes, Anandi?
No, this for me, this woman has related with that, like, he wants to emphasize that she was a woman. She was also in her body.
She's in a
in
the form of
feel,
a woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That's what I feel with a woman before.
And as they pass that borderline, they pass out of human time. There. It's as if past and present just dissolve into timelessness. And there's no future. It's stopped on this, on the borderline of this adventure. The future ended, drowned in nothingness. Time dissolves. Even shapes dissolve. Collapsing shapes, whatever forms might be seen. And they move into another world. Vestibules are small rooms at the entrance of a building where you take off your outer clothes and your shoes. So these vestibules, maybe they had a form, but those forms are collapsing, but that world of shadows is receiving them. And in that world of shadows, they seem to move and yet be still, because there's nowhere to move to. They are not advancing, and yet they seem to pass. They seem like a procession in a picture, rather than conscious forms moving through a real scene. There's a sense of complete unreality. And yet there's something terrible about it. I'd like to read the next sentence. So perhaps Tom can read the next sentence.
A mystery of terror's boundlessness, gathering its hungry strength, the huge pitiless void, surrounded slowly with its soundless depths, a monstrous, cavernous, shapeless throat, devoured her into its shadowy, strangling mass. The fierce spiritual agony of a demon. A curtain of impenetrable. Thank you. Dread.
Yes.
The darkness hung around her cage of sense, as when the trees have turned to blotted shades, and the last friendly glimmer fades away. Around the, in the forest, tied by hunters, closes in no empty night.
Thank you. He makes it really terrifying because he makes us identify with this poor bullock. The bullock has been tied there in the forest as bait for a tiger. The hunters don't want to catch a tiger. So, and the bullock sees he's been tied there, and the last friendly glimmer is fading away, and he knows that this night all around him is not an empty night. It's a night with tigers in it. And you can feel the terror of that night, this fierce spiritual agony of a dream. So I think we'll stop there for today. We'll have to wait for the next episode. A bullock has been castrated.
Present and past, into the timelessness lapsed, arrested upon dim adventure's brink. The future ended, drowned in nothingness. And it seemed to me that that was an incredible power of death, to end the future.
Yeah.
You can look at your past, your present, that we can end, but there's nothing beyond that. And that in the symbolism of the story, it's part of the thing to overcome.
Yes.
With death having such power to end the future. And as you come to the end of a life, really some people are buried. They are always turning back. They're always looking back and saying, you know how it used to be. You know how things were. It's always past oriented. And it's as if...
Because there's no future.
Exactly. It's that belief in death and the power of death that, that seems to be that. You know,
evoked
no
then. Yes.
What a power that is.
Yes.
What
a way
to defeat humanity.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Since 1950,
we have a different story.
Yeah.
No, and it's that different story which Savitri is going
yes.
to not only defend but implement, no? But she has to do it against all the established laws and states and conditions. And she's doing that with all her spirit's light and courage and wisdom and all her great love. That's the story.
I wanted to make one comment too about Paula's question earlier about the woman.
Yes.
There was a line in the last canto where Death uses that. He says,
woman,
your husband suffers.
Yes.
And so I think one sense it emphasizes her mortality, and sometimes it kind of refers to that old mortal and things like that. He kind of derides her.
Yes.
But in here...
Here it's just the other way around. Huh?
But then it's sort of like, you know, the embodied Shakti, I think, it emphasizes in some way.
Yes.
That it's, you know, or like our mother or something.
Yes. Yes.
She has to let go of him to go through the thing that'll set him free. But Savitri came in behind these two, but then we have to come in behind Mother to be the next in line. Then we can win the victory.
Yes, what Savitri does through all the next cantos is speak about the great significance and power of human beings. What human beings are. Death may try to say that you're impermanent shades of time and all that. She's saying, no, I'm much more than that. I'm equal to you. I am thy equal spirit made. And that yes, right at the end. Man was born among the monstrous stars, dowered with a mind and heart to conquer thee, death. That's that human beings have that possibility. So let's listen to, listen to Mother reading some of these early lines. 1 and 2, 3, okay.
The woman first affronted the abyss, daring to journey through the eternal night, armored with light. She advanced her foot to plunge into the dread and shoeless vacancy. Once more, she heard the treading of a god, and out of the dumb darkness, Satyavan, her husband, grew into a luminous shape. This mission to the night, his little form. This is my silent, dark, immensity, entombing the vanity of life's desire. Hast thou beheld thy thought, O transient heart, and know from what the dream thou art was made? At last she spoke, her voice heard by night. I bow not to thee, O shrewd mask of death, black lie of night to the cowed soul of man. Conscious of immortality, I walk. First, I demand whatever Satyavan, my husband, waking in the forest charm, out of his long, pure childhood's lonely dreams, desire. has not. For his beautiful life, give if thou must, or if thou canst or should.
Thanks to Schopenhauer.